podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Neil Atkinson and Craig Hannon. Craig, what's the first sign for you? Christmas is coming. Christmas is on the way.
Oh, there's a few decorations in the shop before Halloween. Negotiations with my girlfriend on when the Christmas tree will go up in before Halloween as well.
Is she pushing for pre-Halloween?
Oh, we've negotiated 16th of November, which is far too early for
me. That's insane. I know it is. And that's your negotiation.
You should see
point.
Where we started.
Was it mid-July?
those are the main two, aren't they?
Well, the ones that get me are the... It's the sandwiches in the shops, Greg's, supermarkets. That's the one that gets me.
I'm delighted with Tesco starting there so early, the Christmas sandwiches. Another one is people kicking off about Christmas adverts on Twitter.
That's true. The one I like, I like the Christmas sandwich early-ish in November.
Big fan.
To then ignore them, sort of end of November, start of December, and then come back strong. You know what I mean? Like it's like comes in a wave.
I wish that was the case. Every year it gets to Christmas and I'm eating cranberry sauce and think, God, I've had too much of this.
Too much. You need to show some more discipline earlier. Yeah. Another way you can get sharp on Christmas is we start doing Beer 52 Christmas adverts.
Oh, yeah.
We're like one of those things now. We like loop in. Like people will say, maybe there'll be some criticism, as there have been of various Christmas adverts, that you're on this with me and Johnny. Maybe people will say I didn't like the fact that they included the wee man. Maybe that's going to be the sort of the tone. What do you reckon?
Wow, that's a heavy start to Christmas for me, isn't it?
Oh my God, the wee man's out of order.
Twitter aghast.
Aghast. Absolutely sickened. So you can get ready for the Christmas period with a free case of craft beer from Beer 52. So you get two extras right now, listeners, if you go to www.beer52.com/wrap and you just cover the posted cost of £5.95. I paused my Beer 52. They're very lovely people. I arranged just to sort of pause for a period of time, but I was pretty clear that I was coming back in December.
Yeah,
that was my attitude. My attitude was, right, can we just have a little bit of a pause, because I was going out again a little bit more, and I was trying to be a bit more responsible in the house. So I thought I've got to stop bringing this stuff in as easily. But I was like, I'm getting it back in November and December, and that's what I did.
Like our subscribers who still haven't come back, I see you.
Hey, we're selling everything in this little segment.
I'm the same. Beer 52 was like my gateway towards like IPAs and different kind of beers. I didn't ever think I liked them, and then suddenly I'm going into the Launders and Penny Lane and grabbing all sorts of spicy things. But I'm a big fan.
Big fan indeed. So with Beer 52, is the world's largest beer club. Each month, members are sent a case with a different theme. You can, usually a different part of the world. You can also choose light beer if you don't want to get any dark stuff, any porters. I like a porter. At this time of year, I would say get yourself a porter. But listen, I'm just one man. As I said before, you can pause or cancel at any time. You can get the magazine and the snacks that come with it as well. So if you go to beer52.com/wrap and you pay your £5.95 postage, you get all this in. This month, it is two extra little bits and pieces. It's beer52.com. Don't waste the time in typing 50. You know what I mean? And typing the W and O. Just keep your keystrokes to a minimum. You'll be able to get all of that in there. But I do genuinely enjoy it a great deal. Talked about it before on a number of occasions. There's some really, really good stuff that comes through. So it is beer52.com/wrap to get your free stuff in line for Christmas.
So this is Player Profiles, and it's our Mo Salah one, and it's already been out for subscribers, but we thought we'd use this opportunity in the international break to give it to everyone, basically, because obviously Mo is absolutely flying at the moment. He's a superstar, and so we thought we'd give everyone this little gift of a subscriber show and have everyone listen to it and give a good example of the work we've been doing. And it's me and Josh Exton here, by the way, the work of me and Josh have been doing for a while now on these player profiles, Josh. And it was something we wanted to do basically when we realised just how amazing the squad was, just to tell their stories really and how they ended up in Liverpool. And it's been good fun.
It has, yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? Because I think sometimes with footballers, particularly in the modern age and the way they have such private lives, and it's understandable because they're massive celebrities these days, you sort of don't really know what goes into their sort of minds and you know what goes on in their day to day and just how they got to where they are, basically. So that it's been really like interesting sort of finding out those stories, really, because you know we think they're a similar group of lads, and they obviously sort of fit a profile that Jurgen Klopp and his staff look for in footballers, and they all seem to get on well with each other as well, but they all come from such different walks of life, and I suppose that's sort of the beauty of it, and it's why we do love this squad so much, is that they all do come from such sort of different backgrounds and creeds and things like that, but they come together and and just win a lot of trophies for the Reds.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're completely right, Josh. You know, the ones we've done so far, and we'll sort of run through them, you know, all are very different and different backgrounds, but something that unites quite a lot of our squad is that, you know, there's always been a bit of battle through adversity, and it's not necessarily been sort of plain sailing. The idea of they weren't necessarily always going to be the sort of superstars that they are now, and that's been really interesting. And the very first one we put out was Andy Robertson, and he's obviously a really good example of someone who was released by Celtic, his boyhood club, and then had to go through, you know, all the leagues pretty much in Scotland, and then over here to got his move to Hull, and then obviously to Liverpool, and on from there. Sort of similar to other ones we've done, really. Bobby Firmino wasn't necessarily lauded as, you know, this big sort of superstar, took an unlikely route to the top for someone now who's a sort of a Brazilian international. And this one, you know, that we're going to play people now, which is Mo Salah, you know, that obviously, you know, we're going to speak about his time at Chelsea, which didn't necessarily go that well for him, and things like that. And so I find that interesting as well, that it's not necessarily these meteoric rises to the top. It's actually, you know, it's hard work, it's a couple of knocks, but it's how they've responded to them.
Absolutely. It's one of the things we sort of love about Liverpool squad and the way it's come together, isn't it, is that we don't really see ourselves as a superpower. And I know if you spoke to Neil Atkinson, he would make you very, very certain that Liverpool are a superpower, and maybe we should sort of treat it like that. But the reason that we don't think that is because of, as you say, these lads' stories. We've not just signed them when they're absolute world beaters, we've signed them with doubts, and it's just, you know, it's a credit to them that they've sort of made those doubts go away. But it just shows the resilience of so many of them as well, and the resilience of the collective, is that they have sort of come together and done the things they've done. And they've had setbacks during their time at Liverpool as well, let's make no mistake about that. You know, you mentioned Andy Robertson there, the first season he came in, Alberto Moreno was starting over him, and I can't think of sort of many bigger setbacks to start your career than that. But, you know, fair play to him, he's turned it around. And it's sort of so nice hearing those different things as well, like particularly the Andy Robertson one. You feel like there is just so many like little setbacks throughout his career, and they're not necessarily the sort of things, you know, you'd think he'd make a different career path over. But I suppose when you're a kid who's coming through the ranks in Scotland the way he was, you might just think, you know what, is it really worth all the stress? Yeah. But I bet he looks back now and goes, well, yeah, absolutely it was, and you know, there's obviously bigger things that have happened in his career. And it's the same for Salah, and same for Firmino too. They've all sort of had those setbacks, but you can tell in the way that people talk about them, their characters shine through, and you can sort of understand then why they have that mentality, why they would overcome those setbacks, but just because of, you know, for all three of them. And even Gini Wijnaldum, he's probably the one we sort of forget a little bit because he's left the squad now, but you sort of start to understand that the sheer levels of determination and where that comes from, and that's sort of beautiful in sort of painting a picture of who they are as people as much as players.
Absolutely. The Andy Robertson one was really nice as well, because we actually went up to where he'd come from, and yeah. we were on the grounds of a school. We didn't actually get to speak to anyone in the school, but basically the sports club that he started at, and the very first football team, you know, outside of school he played for, was on the grounds of the school. So we got to sort of see where he went, you know, to school, and then where he trained, and where he went as a 7-year-old, and speak to coaches who'd work with him at that time, and that was really nice. And then we had a really nice couple of days sort of in and around Glasgow, you know, went to see a couple of his teammates and stuff, and that sort of really helped it sort of come alive for me sort of even more, really. And obviously that's not always possible to do that, especially, you know, this was pre-pandemic, and so a couple of trips sort of had to get cancelled and things like that. But it was nice to sort of meet those people who'd met him along the way, and you know, hear their stories of what he was like as a lad, and just to kind of experience the pride sort of beaming out to them, really, for what their mate had done, or what the lad who they coached had done, and all of that.
Absolutely, yeah. And the funny thing is, they're all like very different stories, aren't they? It was Givenock Soccer Centre, wasn't it? They went down to, and one of the fellas there had run the soccer centre since Andy was there, and since Andy was a sort of younger lad, and he played, Andy Robertson had actually played with this lad's sort of son, and I think you could sort of tell in the way that he was speaking that he thought his son was actually better than Andy Robertson at the time. But one of the sort of characteristics he identified in Andy was that he just worked so hard, and like every time he came down to the pitch, he constantly had a ball. He was constantly sort of having a kick around. He just wanted to play football so much, and I think that's when you get to understand the sort of mentality behind Andy Robertson. And then we go to see Aidan Connolly. I'm pretty sure is his name, isn't it? Down at Queen's Park, and he's talking about rooming with Andy, and like, so he's sort of gone through the journey of becoming a professional footballer. So that's a different story to the one before. But then you're hearing a completely different side of the Andy Robertson we know now, to an extent anyway, in terms of, you know, Andy Robertson's now a world superstar, but this was at a time when he wasn't that at all. But he doesn't seem to have sort of changed much as a person, and you're hearing these stories of, you know, what he was like to room with and things like that, and really getting sort of digging into the person at that point. And then even the ones that we didn't sort of do while we were over there, we'd obviously Roy Henderson, who talks about his time at Dundee United, and just sort of hearing those different stories, Amber Nectar from Hull as well, and hearing those different stories of because at that point that was his rise really through Dundee and Hull. That was when he was becoming a sort of genuine talent, but there was times before that where he absolutely wasn't, and sort of seeing that come together as a bit of a tapestry almost of Andy Robertson's life was a lovely thing. And as you say, going to Glasgow and being able to do those things made it even more special, come to life even more.
I've really enjoyed doing them, you know, from a point of view of learning from, you know, more about the sort of players, but it's also been sort of quite fun, you know, finding out more about, you know, where they've been and messaging footballers. And I've been really sort of pleasantly surprised how many ex-teammates have been willing to speak to us, really, because the idea is, if you've not heard them yet, we speak to supporters, we speak to journalists, but we also speak to teammates and coaches and things like that. And the teammates one, in theory, I think would be the hardest, because, you know, they're either sort of still playing professional football or they've dropped out the game and not necessarily the easiest to find. But actually, you know, so many of the teammates, ex-teammates, have been sort of willing to speak to us, and also have just been like, hey, really nice people, but also kind of like, you know, really made up for their ex-teammates who are now sort of winning trophies and things like that with Liverpool. And I think that says a lot about the people in our squad, really, that, you know, you can get on. You know, I was speaking to, you know, the captain of Finland, do you know what I mean? And he was straight back on to me saying, yeah, I'll do it tomorrow, do you know what I mean? Because that's how, you know, high esteem, you know, these boys are held in.
Absolutely, yeah. Like you say, it does say a lot about the people, because clearly, you know, you go around all these places and they have such a big influence. You know, we obviously within this Mo Salah one, we speak to Micah Richards, and just hearing the way that he talks about Mo, someone you wouldn't really sort of put them two together to an extent as being friends, particularly when you see the way Micah is as a pundit, and he's so sort of like loud and loves a laugh, and then you see Mo who's sort of a bit more quieter and reserved, but hearing the sort of friendship between those two makes it sort of, you know, makes you realise, but also the scale of the achievement that all of these lads have achieved. I think sometimes we can sort of get a bit bogged down in the day-to-day of being a Liverpool supporter and being a part of this Liverpool squad, can't we? And maybe sort of not step back and look at the achievements enough, but they have achieved so much, and they'll forever be a historic team, and it's nice to sort of be able to tell that story of this historic team and tell it on such a personal level as well.
Yeah, so this Mo Salah one you're going to hear now includes Jan Sommer, who was the goalkeeper at Ball when he was there, plays in Germany now and has played, I think, over 80 times for Switzerland. You've got Chris Barber, who's a Chelsea fan, talked about his time there. Micah Richards, as Josh has just said, about the 6 months together on loan at Fiorentina. And then John Solano, who's a journalist out in Italy, talking about the time in Roma. So a real selection there. Two teammates, one supporter, one journalist, so a nice little combination, which is what this show is meant to be. Everyone knows Chris Barber's a lovely fella. Jan Sommer, a lovely handsome man.
Oh, honestly, I was trying to really like take him, what he's saying, over just swooning over him, I think, to be honest. But no, he was so lovely and so sort of generous with his time. And shout out to the press officers at Mönchengladbach and a few other clubs who've sort of really helped us out with everything as well, because they could not have possibly been sort of more accommodating and more willing to give up their time, because we all know that professional footballers and the lives of professional footballers are very busy, but they have all been very generous, particularly so Jan Sommer and Mönchengladbach.
Yeah, Mönchengladbach, absolute legends. But as Josh says, so many football clubs have helped us out. You know, I've been talking to Burnley today for the future one, and they've been absolutely unreal, the sort of media team there. Millwall helped us out a couple of weeks ago with something that we've got coming out sort of next week as well. And plenty, obviously, over in Europe as well, who've seen what we do and are understanding sort of what we're trying to do, and have been really, really helpful. So yeah, so it's been really, really nice. So thanks a lot to anyone who has helped us along the way. Next week we're doing Virgil van Dijk, so that one will be behind the paywall for our subscribers. So if you enjoy this and you want to hear the Virgil one, make sure you subscribe subscribing to the Anfield app. That'll be out next week. If you'd already subscribed, well, that's a nice little treat for you to look forward to as well. Virgil van Dijk has told by supporters and teammates along the way to Liverpool, and he's another one who's got a very interesting story, of course, and you'll hear from that. But without further ado, I hope you enjoyed that little sort of peep behind the curtain about how much, you know, work goes into sort of putting these together. But, you know, they're really good fun. I love working with Josh on them, and they're absolutely great. So here is the Mo Salah one. Hope you enjoy. Up the Reds. This is Player Profiles, our exclusive series looking at the journey Liverpool players have made to the club. In the words of teammates, coaches, journalists and fans, that each player has accounted on their route to Liverpool. This time it's the turn of Mo Salah, the global superstar who is breaking records galore at Anfield. But his European journey started in Switzerland, where he joined Bâle aged just 19. Swiss international Jan Sommer was the goalkeeper at Bâle throughout Salah's time at the club, and has fond memories of seeing Mo develop as a player and a person.
Yeah, I've been already some years in Basel when Mo Salah came, and he came with El Neni together, the player who played in Arsenal before. And Egyptian guy, they came to Basel, and everything was new for them, of course. But Mo Salah is a really nice guy, really really funny as well. And it was interesting because Basel didn't knew already if they have to take him or not. So it was an open situation for them. But I think after one training, it was clear that Mo Salah will be a player of our squad.
So he was sort of on trial, was he, at first?
Yeah, I'm not sure, but I think at this time Basel they came from Egypt, and the story was they come for trainings, and Basel will see how they manage the situation with them, but they were too good.
So very, very quickly you could see his talent and you could see what an asset he'd be for your team.
Yeah, of course. Mo was already incredible quick, incredible fast on the pitch. Sometimes too fast for himself, that he could at this time he couldn't manage his speed with shots in front of the goal. But now when I see him, it's incredible how he improved in front of the goal. That's amazing. What was nice, he was a really humble guy, or he is a really humble guy. So he's really down to earth, really really nice, and it was a pleasure to play with him and to make experiences with him.
You mentioned his personality there and how much of a nice guy he was and how funny he was. Did you notice that immediately from when he came in? So did you get to know him quite quickly when he came into Bâle?
Yeah, of course. When a new player is coming to a team, it's always in the beginning you are a little bit shy. He was young. He was really young. With the language was a problem in the first weeks. But as you know him, he is a guy. He came to Switzerland and he said, "Okay, I want to learn English as quick as possible." So he could speak with us really, really, really quick or really soon when he came. And I remember one story. It's a funny story, but it was like after, I don't know, 1 year or something. He told me that he wanted to create a new Facebook page, and we didn't knew that he's like a really big star in Egypt. So, and after one day with this Facebook page, he had like 500,000 followers, something like that. And then everybody knew, so okay, this is a big story in Egypt. Of course, in the beginning, how I said, he was shy, but really humble, really nice, and really motivated guy. He, on the pitch, always he gave everything, and for the team, to show that he have a lot of quality. And that was my first impressions were really good.
Did that surprise you then, how humble he was, considering how much of a hero he was and still is in back in Egypt?
I don't know. I was not surprised, because when you see him the first time, you can always you see directly that he is quite funny, but like he's a normal guy. He's a normal guy from Egypt, and he started small in Egypt, so, and he get big now. So that's, I don't know, but I was not really impressed, because I knew him from the first moment, and I said, okay, this is a good guy. This is a a guy with a good character, and I could see that directly.
You mentioned before about his determination. Obviously, now he's reached the absolute pinnacle of world football. Did you sense he had that drive in him to always improve, to always to be better? Do you sense there was something maybe a little bit different about him, about how much he pushed himself to get better?
Yeah, how I said before, he was always really motivated to help the team with his qualities. And how I said, he came, he was the fastest player, of course, the fastest player in our team directly. And it was impressive how we had a new style of football we could play with him, because we had a player with 20 meters behind the defenders. So you could play behind the lines to him, right. And you knew that he will win this ball, and he will go alone on the keeper. So it was a change in our game. And yes, we saw it in every training session that he want to improve. He made a lot of shot sessions and after the trainings, the free kicks. And so, we could see directly that he want to improve, of course.
In doing this documentary, we've come to realise how many people Mo Salah has worked with who would class him as friends, how many teammates say they're close to him. There's some who try and get in touch with him now and they struggle to get in touch with him. They can't contact him. Are you still quite close to him? Because I know you two were close during your time there together.
Of course, we lost a little bit the contact when he left to Basel. But sometimes I wrote him in the last month, years, because actually he won too much. Golden boy there, golden boy here, top scorer, champion, I don't know, cup winner, and best player in Egypt. And so I had a lot of opportunities to write him. And to say congratulations, because I'm happy for him that he made his way like he made his way in his career, and that's perfect.
Does that make you proud as well, that you saw Mo come from Egypt and come from the humble beginnings he came from to be in the world star he is now? I know you obviously said he was big in Egypt when he came to Switzerland first, but now he's a hero worldwide for Egypt, for Liverpool, and he's won all these amazing trophies as well.
Yeah, of course, it's always nice. I think after a career, we'll look back and remember the players I played with them, more like Mo Salah. Of course, I always watch his games as well with Liverpool, and I watch Premier League, I'm happy to see him, how he perform, how he score, how he is, and when I write him, there is always an answer coming, so that that means he didn't forgot his old times in Switzerland, in Basel, with us, and that's amazing.
Mönchengladbach obviously in the Champions League this season, you're doing really well. Do you sometimes think about, oh, if I was to play against Liverpool, it'd be up against Mo Salah and maybe remember some of the things he used to do in training and be one step ahead of him?
Of course, but that will be not a good game for him, I think. he will not score in this game. No, of course, we with Mönchengladbach, we try to go through this group at the moment. We have a big challenge in front of us. And of course, when we could take this opportunity to go through, we are really happy to play against teams like Liverpool or other teams. It would be great.
And a nice reunion with Mo maybe as well.
Yeah, of course. That will be funny because, of course, it's a long time ago, but we know each other on the pitch. We know each other well. And why not? We will see.
From Basel, Salah moved to Stamford Bridge at the age of just 21. Chelsea fan Chris Barber recalls a late swoop by Chelsea, paying the asking price for a largely unknown prospect under the noses of many rivals, including the Reds.
I wouldn't be surprised because we played them like a lot, and we almost signed him because he just scored against us. I think he had 3 and 3. He played, there was the Europa League, there was the group stage, and I think they did a double in the group stage. I think he scored both. And we also just let Wan-Mata go to Old Trafford and let a little known man, Kevin De Bruyne, you heard of him? He just left as well, and Salah actually got his number 15 shirt, which has probably been retired now. But part of the reason Mata was out of favour, because Mourinho did that. It's quite hard to talk about Salah at Chelsea without talking about Mourinho, namely because it was a very Mourinho piece of work from start to finish. Even the Mata being pushed out, he was our player of the year 2 years before. He basically came in, so he didn't work hard enough, he wasn't quick enough, so went and picked up Salah. And I actually remember him playing, I remember those Basel games really clearly, because I was quite excited about Mourinho being back. And my main sort of take was Ashley Cole at that time was, I mean, I think Salah started him thinking about retirement to a point, because one thing about Chelsea at that time, we had quite a lot of big Champions League games against a lot of good right wingers, as in like Leo Messi, who until recently had never scored a goal against Chelsea. And I often think a lot of that was because Ashley Cole in those games was like fantastic. He always sort of really stepped up. And we also, interestingly, we signed Felipe Luiz that summer after the January when we signed Salah. And I often wonder if those sort of times, that playing against a quick, nippy sort of early 20s winger was the beginning of the end of Ashley Cole, which is sort of, that was certainly his impact in the Chelsea squad. It was someone who played against us, played really well, beaten us home and away, and other clubs were in for. So yeah, I think the player that we got, I mean, you'd be excited now, even the same profile, sort of just playing at Basel, a couple of games in the Champions League, which, looking back, is really weird, because I don't have any memory of him playing for Chelsea, really. He was often brought on quite late in the league. He only really started, we did quite well in the Champions League that year. I think we got past PSG, and he only really started around that time in the league, and we were resting players. I remember he had a really good game against, I think it was Stoke or Swansea, when he got a goal and hat-trick and just looked decent. So the goals he scored for Basel against Chelsea are really reminiscent of him now. That especially, there's one at the Bridge, which is very similar to the Derby goal that got the Puskas. He got it, it was really similar, like really bent it in around the post. But a lot of that Chelsea side was Hazard and Drogba, and he was there much more as legs to sort of, like I said, the reason why Mata wasn't playing anymore was because he wasn't getting back enough. And that was weirdly the end of Mourinho when he started trying to do that to Eden Hazard later on. But Salah came in and was almost the first victim of this idea that I don't need you to basically score. But when he did come in centrally, like I said, really reminiscent finishes. And if you watch him, especially against Chelsea, really reminiscent, really in behind, or because I associate him at Liverpool with scoring goals. I don't know you as a fan, but I don't think of him as assists. He probably has hundreds, but I very much associate him with big goals and good finishes. And if you watch him at Chelsea, he was much more about very much playing out wide, getting it over the top, sort of coming back in. There wasn't much in the way of goals scored, apart from the memorable goal is the sixth against Arsenal when he came on and slotted. That's the only sort of goal that really sticks in my mind of him playing at Chelsea. I mean, like I said, I know he played in a game at Anfield when absolutely nothing happened of note, but I don't actually honestly remember him being on the pitch. Looking back, it's a massive shame. And I often think, from his point of view, was Chelsea like the making or is it the outlier? Because all of the flaws that were put on him, you've not really seen anywhere else in his career. Like, he went to Italy and was incredible. Obviously, England and Switzerland, he was really, really decent, or still is. Because there's this sort of anecdotal talk and conversation of Mourinho digging him out during a game and him being reduced to tears. And as all decent men do, Mourinho decided that reflected really badly on one of them. But unfortunately for me, it's not the current manager of Tottenham Hotspur who it reflected badly on. It was Salah. And that was kind of the beginning of the end for him.
I mean, you mentioned the game he plays at Anfield, and it's, yeah, and you made a joke. It's obviously a famous game because it's the Gerrard slip, and it's the one that effectively cost Liverpool the title that season. And it's very much a reserve team, and Salah's there. And was that sort of, does that sort of sum up how he was used in that time? He was used when basically there was no one else.
Yeah, I'd say so. He was. I mean, we had Oscar, Willian. Oscar was never really suited out wide. Willian. Mourinho loved Willian and probably still does. Hazard obviously was a standout player, and Salah never got a look in. But as a player we signed, it was better than Oscar, and you could probably say at that time was doing more than Eden Hazard was at times under Mourinho. But yeah, I mean, to be fair though, he played in a cup game, and I think we played Shrewsbury around then, and we know that all the big boys come out for Shrewsbury and they're really, really good. So apart from that game, yeah, he was definitely he was definitely out there with the reserves, with the Torreses, with the players who weren't walking into the 11, and almost Mourinho's not interested in those players and probably still isn't. And he was almost in that sort of Chelsea B that was established at that time. It's a team of reserves, and my memories of him are coming on quite late for the last sort of 10, and not even in games like which we weren't winning, in games which were sort of finished. It wasn't even about injecting his pace on. It was just a square peg in a really round, stupid Mourinho hole.
When he leaves, he first goes out on loan. Yeah. Then he goes on a couple of loans. Yeah. And then obviously eventually gets sold. Some loans feel to a fan like the to get someone games and then come back. Mm-hmm. And then others feel like, yeah, well, this is trying to get him in the shop window to leave. Which one of those did it feel like?
The second one, very, very much. And Victor Moses is the only player who we absolutely clicked buy it now. We had buy it now right under his name, and he ended up coming back and having a season. But yeah, it was very much the end, because we went and got that season. We got Fabregas, we got Costa. We changed how we played over the summer. He didn't really get a look in that season. And then left. I don't even remember him leaving. Like, it didn't even feel like we'd lost anything when he left. It was sort of like, we're not going to see you again. And I don't know what he could have done at Florentina to, in that 6-7 weeks, to actually come back and get into that side. Because Oscar left around that time. And I mean, Willian Hazard, sort of the second half of the last decade, were pretty set in stone. But they haven't had a great deal of competition, I don't think, from anyone who is. You look at Callum Hudson-Odoi now, who's got that pace and that option, and I think he'd be pushing that one of those two, probably Willian, a lot harder than Salah has ever really given the chance to.
So when you sort of look back now, do you think, oh, typical Chelsea, you didn't give a young lad a go and he could have been brilliant, or do you think actually it was probably a bit too soon for him? He probably wasn't ready for Chelsea at that point, and you know, he was better off kind of leaving, and then all this has kind of been a product of it.
I think the wording of that question is what I'd agree with, that he wasn't ready for Chelsea at that time. You wouldn't have had Klopp then, would you? If he had come to you, would it have been Rodgers?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that would have been probably a much better fit, I imagine. I mean, Mourinho was giving it the little horse around that time. It was very much Chelsea that's the problem I see in that relationship. You signed a young lad who is Egyptian, has spent a little bit of time in Switzerland, not even that long at Basel, I think maybe two seasons.
Yeah, two seasons he was there, yeah.
Put his name in the shop window against us. I wouldn't be surprised if there was conversations had around that time of, when you're ready, let us know. And like I said, it feels like we're always at the front of the queue. But I do think it's Chelsea at that time that's the problem. It's the same with other players mentioned, you know, De Bruyne. I mean, I was looking at some stuff today. You had like Schürrle, Van Ginkel, just players that you never associate, just completely anonymous in their time, at the time at Chelsea. And I think Chelsea was the problem. I think if he'd signed the year before and had a run in the team, or even if he'd come in that second Mourinho season when he was actually trying to win things. Because that first one, when it wasn't his side and he had Torres and Mata and he didn't have Matic and sort of the players that I think he associates with how he plays football, Salah didn't have a chance. And it's one of them where you don't know how much Mourinho signed him or the club were well interested in him, because we'd seen him three times in the last 6-7 months. Florentina's not an easy place to go, and Roma's definitely not an easy place to go. Liverpool was, you know, give up at that time. Mid-table fodder. But right, I mean, no. Nowhere else he's gone is easy. I wouldn't say he's taken... I mean, I think, again, to mention someone else, I think De Bruyne, the Wolfsburg move is quite a nice move. Big club, you're going to get a lot of fans, you're going to get a lot of the ball. Whereas Salah went straight into a side who just lost Juan Cuadrado, who was doing everything for them, and just filled in again to Roma. I can't remember who Roma sold. They did sell someone. But he filled boots in big stadiums everywhere else. And like I said, I often wonder if Chelsea's the outlier, because he strikes me as quite mentally strong now, especially the sort of stuff he seems to talk about as Egyptian captain. So I just think, yeah, Chelsea at the time, rather than any other factor, is why it ultimately didn't work.
Finding game time at Chelsea tough, Salah went on loan to Fiorentina, where one of his teammates was England international Micah Richards.
When Mo came in the January, it was just brilliant, because obviously he come from a time where he didn't do well at Chelsea, but he wasn't appreciated at Chelsea. A lot of his appearances were off the bench, and because he didn't like score a couple of goals every time he come in, he didn't really get a fair chance, I would say. But I just remember first training session with Mo, just like, he doesn't pass at all. Like, but it was justified because he just scored wonder goals all the time. You know what I mean? I was just like, and a lot of people think that, oh, his best form was, you know, when he was at Roma, and then that's what got him. But he was actually doing it in Fiorentina. His goals wasn't as good, but in terms of his impact on the game, it just skinned like three or four players every single game. We used to go for coffees in Florence, and we couldn't go anywhere. Well, I could, but he couldn't, because he was just like, he was just this god after about 2 months of being there. I liked him because he was a nice, humble lad as well. I know a lot of people, I don't say he's arrogant, but maybe I'm speaking out of turn here, but maybe the Liverpool fans don't view him in the same light as Mane, because, you know, Mane always seems to be doing charitable things and stuff like that. But he is a top player, and I knew straight away he would go and do what. I didn't think he would score as much goals. I didn't think, he always used to scuffle up a lot of his shots. He used to do all the hard work and then wouldn't put it away as much. But in terms of impression, there's one that stands out to me. He's playing Juventus in the Coppa Italia, and he was a burst from a corner, and he's run by about three or four players in their home ground. And that, you don't do that at Juventus, and that's when I knew he was special from that moment there. That's why I knew he could do it against anyone once he did it against Juventus.
In terms of, you know, you mentioned there the language thing, you managed to bond with him. So was he someone who you sort of got on with pretty well off the pitch as well?
Yeah, I used to speak to him more or less every day. We'll go to training together sometimes as well. It was on fire. It was only about a mile or two up the road, but we used to do everything together, really, with Mark. Anyone who spoke English, it's like you gravitate to the ones who speak your language, don't they? No matter how good lads you are. And sometimes the banter in the dressing room, if you don't understand the jokes when telling them in Italian, you understand on the pitch because it's just football language, but like when they're having their jokes, couldn't really understand. But it's fortunate to have a really good group there, actually. But yeah, we used to do everything together. He was a top lad. He really was.
Do you have any sort of thoughts, Mika, about what sort of player you were getting from Chelsea at the time? Because obviously you'd been at City just before that, before you went on loan to Fiorentina, and he'd been at Chelsea. Did you sort of have an idea of the kind of player you were going to get, or is it more that when your teammates, you sort of wait to see somebody in training and in matches before you make a proper judgment on them?
I think we're too quick now in society to rule people out. You know, if they don't play well at one club, look at like Kevin De Bruyne. Everyone was laughing when Man City played that fee for him, but when he came to Fiorentina, he had a lot to prove, if you know what I mean. I don't think he would have, well, maybe imagined that it would have went as well, because it just spiraled into, it was ridiculous. But I knew, I always knew his quality.
Did you sense he had a drive about him to sort of succeed at the top level? I mean, I guess a lot of players, you know, you will have that who've got to that level. But did you sense with Mo, you know, underneath the nice guy and the friendly guy, that you knew that he had a real drive to kind of make it to the top?
It's crazy, actually, because he I don't know if he's a Liverpool fan, but at Fiorentina, he said he wants to be playing for one of the top clubs, and if he goes to England, he wants to play for Liverpool.
Wow.
I know he'd come from Chelsea, but I think Liverpool's the one that he really wanted to go to. So he got there in the end. Yeah, he took a different pathway. But to see the sort of trajectory and how good he's done, it's just amazing. Because he said that to me earlier on, like, he must have had that self-confidence and belief to think, well, I think when he came to Fiorentina, I think he felt a little bit hard done by Chelsea, where they didn't really give him a proper chance. Whereas he was just, all right, well, I'm going to show you. And his numbers at Roma, when he went from Fiorentina to Roma, was just staggering. And a lot of people think it's easy to score in the Italian league, but it's actually, it's really hard, because most of the time it's just 11 men behind the ball. And some of the goals, wondrous goals he scored, was just incredible. But in terms of mentality, I think he had the mentality from when I first met him, that he always wanted to play at the best level.
Mika, you mentioned that self-confidence that he seems to possess when he's on the pitch, but I find Salah to be quite almost like a complex character, because he seems to be quite shy off it as well. Was that something you got at the time? Was that, you know, while he's got that swagger on the pitch, maybe he's a bit quieter off it?
you know, like he's very religious, isn't he? So he's always making sure he's going to pray at the right times, and he rarely came out with his missus as well, just because that's just the way he was. Honestly, he's an incredible character. I think he can be quite shy if you don't know him, but once you've opened him up, he's actually got banter. He's actually really hilarious. You know what I mean? He's actually, yeah, he's got some big time comments. You know what I mean? Like, just like when we go for dinner or something like that, he said, "Don't worry, I've got this." You know, I've got plenty more money coming my way. You know, as a joke.
Yeah, yeah.
He didn't mean it. He's not arrogant with it. He just, once he let get through that shell, yeah, he really opens up, and he's got good banter. Actually, he really is off the field. He's got banter for sure.
So I suppose you still bump into him every now and again now, because obviously you're working doing the media stuff. You're at games, and so I presume it's always nice when you do sort of see Mo Salah in those circumstances.
Yeah, it's weird, you know, because I just come out of the game like last year, but it's weird like being on the other side, you know what I mean? Because you don't know how players are going to be with you, because I'm not a journalist, you know what I mean? Yeah, I work in punditry, but I'm not looking for a story. I'm actually looking to protect players, you know what I mean? So sometimes, like, they come out and say, "Oh, what are you after? What are you fishing for?" I'm like, come on, mate. I'm here to try and protect you guys, you know what I mean? So I think initially they're sort of like, "Ooh, I'm not sure here." But then, you know, after a couple of, you know, minutes conversation with them, they realise that actually, yeah, he's just looking out for us, you know what I mean? But I seen him at Anfield, and I seen him, he was out for dinner with, I think it was Shaqiri in Manchester one time, and was just reminiscing about the good times. So, but he always says, "Oh yeah, let's meet for a coffee, let's meet," but he never texted me, mate. He's big time now, isn't he? He's big time.
You must be proud of him though, kind of what he's achieved, because obviously he was your buddy out there in Italy, and what you did together, and you know what he's done to kind of get where he is. So, you know, when he did come over to Liverpool and get that move that he'd said to you was a dream for him, and that he's scoring every week as he was, you know, in that first season, you must have felt proud of him.
Yeah, I felt really, really proud for him, because I know how hard it is, not just to make it in the Premier League, but to win, you know, Champions League, and now to this year win the Premier League. If you think about the, like, it's astonishing. If you look at Klopp, you know, 5 years ago when it's taken over, like, Liverpool have got to two Champions League finals, like, and won the Premier League, like, the best. And I know, disrespect to the FA Cup, because when we first won the FA Cup, it was brilliant. But we're talking about the best trophies that you can win in the world, you know what I mean? To do it in the Premier League, then go win the Champions League. For me, like, you can only feel proud that they fully deserve it. And when you work so hard for something and it comes together, it just feels so much better. And yeah, I'm honestly so proud of him, because he deserves it, and he'll get more. This is not, you know, the end of it. Like, he's got so much more to give if he wants to. I'm sure he'll be at Liverpool for years to come. You know, he's at a good age where he's still got a lot of years left in him, where he can still, you know, provide that top-notch service.
You touched on it before, but I suppose with your work in the media now, and where you sort of have to be maybe a little bit more neutral, or I think some people would probably argue against that with yourself and City, but do you sort of watch Salah now and think that maybe he is a bit underappreciated at Liverpool? I think you did sort of mention that before, but
yeah.
I think there's Liverpool fans who maybe think he's maybe a bit too much of a superstar almost to sort of play for Liverpool Football Club.
Yeah, it's a weird one, you know, like, just in the media in general, you hear different whispers, how, you know, and I think I've heard Carragher say a couple of times, where obviously he loves Mane, he even says how many times he comes out on TV and he just says, "I love you," you know what I mean? and I think with Salah, I don't know what his work rate. Look, I don't watch every Liverpool game because it's physically impossible to do so. But just from my friends who are Liverpool fans, they respect him, but I don't think they give him the true... Like, you know, like, this season, I don't even know how many goals he's got. Like, he's not even been mentioned in Team of the Year, but he still had an unbelievable season. That's how good of a standard he's set. Do you know what I mean? And if he's not scoring 30 goals a season, people think, oh, well, he's had a bad season. But he was never going to... It would be difficult to replicate that season where I can't remember how much goals he ended up with, you know, in all competitions. But it was ridiculous. And I don't know if it's body language, because I think we're all guilty of, if someone's body language is not the way it wants to be, and sometimes, like, he could pass to Mane in certain situations or Firmino, and he doesn't. Maybe Liverpool fans maybe think he's not that much of a team player, but, you know, I'll say it again, like, that front three is incredible. And if you take Salah out of that, you see, every time I take Salah out of that, if you put him on the bench, or they're not the same team, they're really not the same team. So, you know, I think he's up there with Villa, with Liverpool's most valuable player. And maybe the only thing that lets him down, maybe it's just his body language at times, or not passing at the right moments, being a little bit greedy, which I know of because I trained with him.
And just so a last one for me, obviously he was only at Fiorentina a long time, but he obviously made the big impression. You said, you know, when you were out with him, that the fans were stopping you and stopping him, not stopping me. but loving him. And obviously, you know, even a very short time, he made the big impression there amongst those supporters.
Yeah, they absolutely loved him. You know, it was only like 6 months he was there. We're not talking about 2 years. Like, I was calling him phenomenal. That's what the words are, just walking for the coffees and dinner and all that. Honestly, I know Florence is only a small place and there's only one team in Florence, but he was just loved by everyone. He was like a god there. He literally was. And I've rarely seen a player make that much impact so soon at a club that I've been at. He ticked all the boxes, and he was so consistent for me. It was like they'd had a superstar of the team, and Salah, it was incredible. I don't know if you guys have got time, but if you just Google Salah's goal against Juventus in the Coppa Italia, I think the game was 2-1. He was just amazing. It really was. And to have that impact so soon, I can't say anything better about him, to be honest.
And you mentioned before his relationship with Dejan Lovren. I don't think most people would have realised sort of how close you two were during your time at Fiorentina. Obviously, you said that, you know, it was good that you were both English-speaking, but do you often think that maybe if you'd have spent a bit more time together, you could have shared a similar bromance to the one that him and Dejan shared?
Well, considering he won't bring me back for a coffee, I don't know if he was just using me because he was, you know, there's only a limited people spoke English out there. But yeah, when we was out there, it was difficult because you go into a changing room, and obviously he's the star, and he can pretty much do what he wants. And when he's a star, people started treating me with a little bit more respect as well, just because I hung around with him. You know what I mean? It's like the cool kid at class, innit? If you're friends with a cool kid, then everyone wants to be, you know, you're cool then as well. You know what I mean? So yeah, the relationship was really good, but I'm actually going to text him after this and say, what's happening with this coffee, mate? Because we're taking a piss now.
But it was Roma where Salah finally found himself and truly announced his talents to the football world. John Solano is a Roma fan and journalist who got to witness just how pivotal Salah became.
We saw a little bit of him at Fiorentina. He really became renowned after a very good performance against Juve. He did catch the eyes of some clubs, Roma, obviously, Inter being another one. So he made his mark very quickly. But even before he arrived at Fiorentina, he is not a guy I admittedly knew much about. But again, once he arrived in the city, he made his mark rather quickly.
When it gets announced then that he is moving to Roma on loan for the season after the Fiorentina, woman, what was your sort of initial reaction to that? Were you, as you say, you weren't necessarily aware of what he was like as a player, but did you feel like at the time you were getting someone who had big potential?
Yeah, I think so, because I thought he showed enough at Fiorentina to warrant a move to Roma. I thought he was worthy of the Roma shirt. I thought he certainly had the quality. He arrived 2015, and the year before that, Roma were really dreadful. They needed a real punch in attack. Rudy Garcia was really dying for somebody with pace on the wing. So when he initially arrived, and again, based on what we saw when he was in Firenze, it was exciting. Now, did we foresee how much of a takeoff he would have, so to speak, in the Roma shirt? No. But there certainly was excitement surrounding him because, again, I think he showed a lot of qualities at Fiorentina that would get you excited. Obviously, the pace, the scoring ability, showed up in big matches against Juve, as I said previously. So there was certainly a lot of excitement surrounding him when he arrived, yeah.
And you mentioned some of those sort of attributes to his game, his technique and his pace and things like that, but was there anything else that sort of stood out to you about Mohamed Salah within that first season at Roma? Because he scores 14 goals that season, so he is a bit of a revelation, as you say, but was there anything that sort of stood out to you about him and the way he played?
For me, one of the things for him that it's maybe a bit underrated, and perhaps when he's playing in the Premier League, you don't have the chance to see it as much, but I think his technical ability is a bit underrated. We all know about his pace, we all know about his scoring ability, but when you come to the Serie A, it's very different. It's not like any other league. It's much slower, much more tactical. So to have that technical ability is obviously a good thing and a plus. So I think that's one part of his game, even to this day, that I think is very, very underrated. And that was the part for me that I was very surprised by. Just in general, I thought the adaptation process was very, very quick. It's very different when you come to Italy. It seems to take some a bit longer than others because, again, it is so slow. Tactically, it's like a chess match. So I was very, very surprised again by the technical ability and how quickly he was able to adapt to things here.
One of the things that stands out to me as a Liverpool supporter, sort of watching him from his first season in Liverpool, was how quickly he sort of won over the fans and how quickly he became a big part of Liverpool Football Club and a big part of the fans' hearts as well. Was that sort of similar to the way he was at Roma in the initial stages?
Yeah, I think that was the case. He's a very humble guy. Anybody who meets him will tell you that. That's sort of a trait that's endearing here. You know, we're used to a lot of personalities in the Italian capital, and he was just a guy who worked very hard. He was humble. He was always polite, very great with the fans. So, yeah, I think he won over the supporters very, very quickly. He gave all he could on the pitch, and he scored lots of important goals. So, yeah, I think he endeared himself very quickly with the supporters.
And obviously at the end of that season then, in the summer, the deal is made permanent for him to go to Roma. At that point, you must have been thinking, well, the sky's the limit for Mo Salah. You must be sort of, having watched that first season, think the potential there is massive.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he really was benefited too after Rudy Garcia was sacked in January. Luciano Spalletti arrived. And he plays a much more attacking style football, very direct, very vertical. And it was very, very apparent that this type of game suited Salah. And when Spalletti remained with the club, I think the dynamic that they had in the attack was absolutely phenomenal. Obviously, you had Salah on the right, you had Dzeko in the middle, and then on the left, you had Diego Peralti, who it was interesting because all three had these different aspects that just suited each other so well when they were on the pitch at the same time. Yeah, it was fantastic for Roma. Obviously, a shame they couldn't keep it together longer. But yeah, I think when it was made permanent, certainly everybody thought, wow, this is really the opportunity for Roma to potentially maybe even win the Scudetto and knock Juve off their throne, so to speak, because you had the manager, you had the number nine, you had the very technically gifted left winger in Diego Peralti, and then you had this very quick winger on the right who could score goals from anywhere. And yeah, I certainly think there was a lot of excitement when it was made permanent, yeah.
And you mentioned the sort of state of the club before Mohamed Salah arrived and the way things weren't really going well for Roma at that time. And it seemed to sort of, you know, go through the turnaround. Obviously, you mentioned the change of managers, but how important do you think that Salah was to that turnaround for Roma? You mentioned, you know, his sort of role as that man on the right-hand side who could score goals. But how important do you think he was to the overall turnaround?
I think very important, particularly in the latter stages of the 2015-2016 season, because Roma, they were chasing a Champions League place. I believe at one point they were fifth or sixth in the table. Rudy Garcia gets sacked in January. Luciano Spalletti arrives. And this was a season where earlier, Edin Dzeko was really, really struggling. Now, 2016-2017, he explodes. But 2015-2016, it's a very difficult time. And Edin Dzeko, I believe, all season had maybe 7 or 8 league goals. It was under 10. So he had a very, very first poor season. Salah was more or less carrying the attack for Roma that entire season. And ultimately, his goals really helped carry Roma into a Champions League place, because it looked very unlikely that they were going to finish in the top of the table at that time. It looked like a Europa League place was more than likely. So, yeah, his goals were extremely important.
And then when the move to Liverpool is starting to sort of be rumoured, I remember we actually spoke to you at the time when it was, you know, rumoured to be getting done, and then and when it finally got done as well. What was the sort of feeling among fans at that time, particularly given that the transfer fee, which I know you can look back with hindsight and say seems relatively small, but at the time, with it being around sort of £35 million?
It's interesting because, yeah, you mentioned it with hindsight. This was just before. Now, Salah was sold before the 30th of June, which is always an important date for Roma because they need to fulfill financial fair play obligations. And that always seems to be the date that supporters seem to remember, because that's the end of their financial year, the 30th of June every year. So the writing was on the wall. They knew that Salah would definitely leave. I think even when he arrived, we knew at some point he would be returning to England. We just didn't know when. Obviously, we hoped that he would remain at Roma for a bit longer. But as far as the fee goes, I remember talking to a couple of radio stations based in the UK, and they were saying, oh, 42 million euros plus 8 million euros, bringing it to potentially 50 million euros. That seems so much. And I was very adamant. I was extremely adamant. I didn't think that was too much whatsoever, because I thought he displayed a lot during his time at Roma. And I understand how somebody coming from a foreign league, you have some trepidations or some worries about him being able to adapt to the Premier League, which I did admit. I said I believe it will take some time for him to adapt. I did not expect him to adapt as quickly as he did. But I thought the fee, in hindsight, obviously it looks terrible. Ramon Monchi, I know this is about Saab, but you couple that with Alisson, and it seems almost criminal what he did. But in hindsight, the fee looks like Roma got absolutely robbed. At the time, it seemed like, a fairly fair fee. But then if we remember that summer, that's when everything blows up, right? We have Neymar that summer, and the market really seems to just be flipped on its head. And these valuations just seemingly overnight seem to shoot up. So given that, I think it was almost like the perfect recipe for Salah to leave, and a couple of years later, it just looks dreadful from Roma's standpoint.
And it's interesting that you mentioned Alisson there, because it gets to the end of Salah's first season where he has been such a revelation at Liverpool, and that was maybe when it was sort of most raw for Roma fans, just in terms of what had actually been lost that previous summer. So Liverpool obviously go back in for Alisson Becker in the summer, and there seemed to be a suggestion from certain sections of the media that Roma were putting a sort of premium price on Alisson's head, maybe putting a few more million pounds or million euros on, because they felt so shortchanged by the Mo Salah transfer.
Yeah, I don't know if that was necessarily the case, because I do think that they would have easily gotten, whether it was from Liverpool or somebody else, I think they probably would have easily gotten the fee that they had gotten for Alisson. I think I said this on a number of outlets, but Alisson was the first choice goalkeeper at Roma for literally only one season. The season before that, he was behind Szczesny, who was on loan at Roma, but we all knew that Szczesny was going to leave at the end of the season. And I'm 30 years old, and without question, Alisson in that one season was the best goalkeeper I've ever seen at the club. Without even remotely thinking about it for even a second, it cannot be disputed. So I don't think that had it been Liverpool or somebody else, I think Roma, I think they would have gotten that fee no problems whatsoever. But Roma, where they are financially right now, it could have been Madrid, it could have been Barcelona, it could have been Manchester United, whoever would have approached Roma with that fee, they were always going to take it.
Mo Salah joined Liverpool in the summer of 2017 and has already moved into the top 15 goal scorers in the club's history. What else can he achieve? It's going to be fun finding out. I hope you've enjoyed this show. If you haven't already, do check out the previous episodes on Andy Robertson, Bobby Firmino and Gini Wijnaldum. And do let us know who you'd like us to do next. Awesome, awesome, awesome. Hope you enjoyed that. Mo Salah, what a fella. Thanks so much to Jan Sommer, Chris Barber, Mika Richards, John Solano, obviously, for taking the time to speak to us a year or so ago. If you did enjoy that, as I said just before, we've got a Virgil van Dijk one coming out next week that is for subscribers to the Anfield app. Virgil van Dijk player profiles. It's a fantastic one. It's got a couple of teammates. It's got supporters on there as well, all talking about how Virgil van Dijk made it and how he made it to Liverpool and his journey along the way. So that is coming next week. We think it's a belter. So if you want to listen to that and you don't subscribe yet, theanfieldrap.com/subscribe. But thanks a lot for listening. Up the Reds. Sports Social Podcast Network.